Admiral Dover had flown in a Navy fighter jet from the Alameda Naval Air Station right after Sandecker's alert. An NYPD helicopter flew him over to the Sandy Hook Coast Guard Station, where two fast 110-foot patrol cutters were waiting for his arrival to intercept the Mongol invader. Dover nodded silent greetings to the 10 men and 2 women clustered in the room as he walked to the head of the conference table. He wasted no time on niceties. "Have the New York police aerial patrols flown over the ship?" A police captain who stood along one wall nodded. "We have a copter on station as we speak. He reports that the tanker is running at full speed toward the harbor."
"Gentlemen," Dover said, "you've all been briefed over the phone and fax by Admiral Sandecker in Washington and know what to expect. If we can't turn it away, it must be sunk."
A Coast Guard commander off to Dover's side spoke. "Sir, if we fire into the tanks, we could very well turn her into one immense explosion. The entire flotilla of intercepting boats and helicopters could be caught in the fireball."
"Better 1,000 than 1,000,000, Dover replied curtly. "But under no circumstances are you to fire forward of the stern superstructure. If the crew refuses orders to heave to, then I will have no choice but to call in U.S. Navy fighters to destroy the ship with air-to-surface missiles. In that event, everyone will be warned in ample time to put as much distance as possible between their vessel and the Mongol invader before combustion occurs."
"It doesn't look like any submarine I've ever seen," Giordino remarked, staring at a sleek vessel that looked more like a luxury yacht than an undersea boat.
Pitt stood on the dock at Sheepshead Bay south of Brooklyn, admiring the 85-foot craft whose exterior styling was that of an elegant powerboat. Giordino was right. Above the waterline, she looked like most any other expensive yacht. The differences were what could be seen underwater. Able to sleep 11 passengers and crew in lavish comfort, the Coral Wanderer was the largest model the Meridian Shipyard of Massachusetts built of the Ocean Diver series. The large, round viewing ports in the forward sides of her hull were similar to those mounted in the hull of the Golden Marlin. Captain Jimmy Flett walked down the stairs from the deck to the dock. He was short and burly, with a face turned ruddy from a long love affair with Scotch whiskey, but his blue eyes had managed to remain clear and bright. He squeezed Pitt's hand to a pulp. "Dirk, how long has it been since we trod a deck and drank a scotch together?" "On the Arver III, back in 88. "The search for the Bonham Richard," said Flett, in a voice surprisingly soft. Pitt introduced Al, then said to Flett, "So you've gone soft and become a skipper of luxury boats." "I'm a seaman who prefers the surface. Nothing under the water has any interest for me."
"Then why do it?"
"The pay is good and the job is easy. I'm getting old and can't fight the elements the way I used to. As soon as the Coral Wanderer passes all the regulations, I'm scheduled to sail her to Monte Carlo, where her new owners intend to put her out for charter to wealthy Europeans." Pitt then explained the dire situation they were in, adding, "This is an extremely critical situation." Flett stared into Pitt's green eyes. "What do you want with her? All you said over the phone was that it was a Numa charter."
"We intend to use her as a torpedo boat."
"I see," Flett murmured softly. "Since the Wanderer doesn't carry torpedo tubes, what have you got in mind?"
"Did you ever hear of the Confederate submarine, Hunley?"
"I have."
"We're taking a page from her history," Pitt said, with a self-assured smile.
20 minutes later, the three men had mounted a long pipe that acted as a spar and protruded 30 feet in front of the boat's bow. 2 more pipes were secured along the deck beneath the raised cabin. Under 3/4 throttles, the Coral Wanderer shot across Sheepshead Bay into the open water toward the Verrazano Bridge. The Coast Guard cutters and a fleet of smaller patrol boats had already spread out across the water ahead of the Wanderer's bow. Overhead, they observed 2 Coast Guard and 2 New York police helicopters circling like vultures above a huge ship painted a dirty buff color. Flett shoved the twin-throttle levers to their stops and cut a course that would send the Wanderer on an angle toward the LNG's midships. On board the Coast Guard cutter William Shea, Admiral Dover opened contact with the LNG tanker Mongol Invader.
"This is the United States Coast Guard. Please heave to immediately and prepare for boarding."
Dover hailed again, and a third time, but there was no reply. Then a calm, steady voice said,
"Coast Guard, this is the master of the Mongol Invader. I have no intention of bringing this ship to a stop. You will be advised that any attempt to damage my vessel will bring dire consequences."
The suspense was suddenly swept away. The horror was real. Dover gave the order for the helicopters to land their anti-terrorist teams on the open deck forward of the tanks. At the same time, he directed the cutters to come alongside with their guns manned. The two Red-Orange Coast Guard modified Dolphin helicopters took up station behind the stern of the LNG tanker as the first blue-black Jayhawk police copter came in low over the bow. The pilot flared out the helicopter only 20 feet above the bow. That was as far as it got. A small missile launched from atop the first tank tore into the helicopter, bursting it open like a firecracker in a tuna can.